7th Street, and I give you Ardo N.
Hi, my name's Ardo Matic. Wow, a little overwhelming here. But you know what? That's good because I can't see more than half of you, so I'm all right with that. I feel like I'm at a regular meeting. Like Lynn said, I'm from the Pasadena area. I grew up in Pittsburgh. And I remember when I first started getting clean and I heard about spiritual retreats, and it used to boggle my mind because I never knew what I always considered, you know, spirituality and that whole side of everything to be like with the monks and the nuns and the priests and all that, you know what I mean? That was spiritual, but you and me, we were something else altogether, you know? Where that was, I don't know. Somewhere in limbo somewhere, I guess. But I had no clue what spirituality was. And it took me a while in recovery to connect with that. I guess I was connected a little bit with it when I was growing up. I was born in a different country. I come from Hungary. I got here when I was like 5 years old. There was a hell of a revolution going on back there back in 57 or whatever. And I guess my dad felt, you know, feared for his life a little bit, and he figured we'd come over here and see what he could see how we could live here. And I'm glad he did. But I guess, I don't know, from that time on, from the very beginning like that, I always felt kind of different, and I never knew how to take anybody, and I didn't, and it was hard for me to get to connect with people because I always felt a little bit different because I couldn't speak, I couldn't talk, and that's how I ended up with the name Ardo. When people would ask me my name and I would say what my name was, I don't know, I ended up with about 20 or 30 different nicknames, and the older I got, Ardo was the shortest one that stuck, and that's what most people know me by today. Very few people that I grew up with since we were little even know what my real name is. There's only a handful. But one thing my dad always did, though, he didn't talk a whole lot as I grew up. He just did, you know. He just did. When I was 12, he used to take me to work with him. He came here to Pittsburgh because my mom had an uncle here that had a furniture store, and he could get a job, and he could get one with somebody that knew what the hell he was talking about or something, somebody he could relate with, you know? And he delivered furniture for this guy for like 30-some years. Never called off sick, never missed a day's work, you know what I mean? Bitched at me a lot of times for shit I wanted to do, but because he was trying to teach me something, and all I was about was trying to have some fun or whatever, and he was really just trying to tell me that men go to work to provide. He always tried to tell me this is what we do, you know? And I never wanted to, I don't know, I always got the thing that we were about having fun. I wanted to have fun, you know? I had a little brother, he's 6 years younger than me, And I got to be a little protective of him. And I guess I kind of lost my track a little bit of having fun, because then I got into the crazy mode. I always had to think, I always felt like I had to be a little bit more crazier than the next guy. My dad used to make wine, and every Halloween, maybe a couple days before Halloween, he'd come home with these crates of grapes. And Halloween night was when we had to crush them. And me being the oldest son, I had to stay home instead of going trick-or-treating to crush grapes. And I had a big resentment behind that. You know, I always got out there late. So I used to go out there and snatch people's candy. So I would have some candy. But by Christmas, he made some of the best Dago red wine you ever wanted to taste. You know? He used to be proud. He'd hold it up to the light. It'd be crystal clear and that. And I remember, I don't know, I was in about the seventh grade or whatever, and he had a little room down in the cellar where he used to keep the vats where they would ferment and stuff, and there was a transom above the door, and it was just a little bit too small for me to fit, and I had a short friend in school, and I talked him into climbing in there one day, and I gave him, we had some mouthwash bottles, and he went in there, filled these bottles up, and we went out, and went down to the Allegheny River where we used to swim, and we killed these bottles. And from that time on, that was my using. I didn't use the drink to socialize. I didn't smoke to socialize. I didn't snort dope to socialize. I didn't shoot dope to socialize. I drank, smoked, snorted, did whatever I had to do to get blasted. That was my mission. It felt good, and I did whatever it took to do that. You know, I didn't. If I wanted to go somewhere to party, we always pitched in on a keg, quarter keg, couple cases or whatever, went in the Allegheny Cemetery, got blasted, and then we went to the dance, or then we went to the party, or then we went to socialize, you know? That was my using. I got into sports a little bit when I got into high school, and I found out real quick I ain't nothing about no finesse. Never was and probably never will be. I got into football and boxing, you know, and I found out I was pretty good at it, and I liked it, but it got into the way of using. And my dad, he wasn't more about that. I couldn't play school ball because when I got to be 12 and 13, I had to go to work. I had to do something to make some money. He said, if you want something, I'll pay for half of it. I said, damn. So I went and got me a job at the bowling alleys, and I went there and set pins. I got a job there when I was about 11. And that's what my mom and dad would do for me. If I wanted something, they would say, if it cost 12 bucks, they gave me 6. And I had to put in the other 6, you know? And I guess they were just trying to teach me something. But I guess all I really learned was that if I really wanted it, I told them what I wanted, and I went out and thieved it, or had somebody thief it for me, and I saved, I got what I wanted, and it didn't cost me as much. In my senior year of high school, friends of mine got into burglarizing some drug stores. And, I guess this is where my thing really took off. I found out that, this was my niche, because it was all about getting high. There were some people that went around, they robbed houses, and they did this and did whatever, and they would get money. But what they had to do with the money was spend it to get the drugs or whatever it was they wanted to get high. Me, on the other hand, if I went and robbed a drugstore, I had what I wanted, and if I wanted some money, I just sold that. And then I didn't have to sell the good shit, I just sold the garbage. Made all the sense in the world to me. So, I don't know. Like I said, and I was into sports and all that, and it really started to play havoc with me. And then I didn't know which way to flip. And then a friend of mine had gotten blamed for a drugstore that we had robbed because he worked there, and they just naturally, you know, figured, well, if he didn't do it, he'd know who did. And there was 7 of us on this store. 3 guys ended up going to juvenile centers. 3 of us ended up going into the service, and one guy ended up getting probation on it. And the reason I went into the service was because I went in with the mentality that if I went in and I did 7 years in the service, when I got out, the statute would be gone and they couldn't hold me for it, and I'd be free to go head on with it. Only thing was, I guess God had a different plan for me, because when I got into the service, I found out I had nothing to do with this life. Nothing whatsoever. No matter how infallible I thought I was, how indestructible I believed I became, I have nothing to do with this. Somebody else is in control. And I was alright. I was alright till, a little while after I got out of boot camp, then I went over to the Mediterranean, and I came back from the Mediterranean, and I met this guy from Tennessee. He was all of maybe 6'7", 6'8". He looked like a twig. He was maybe 120, 130 pounds. and he was just a wound-up, tense ball of nerves is all he was. And I just asked. He showed me a picture of him when he came into the service, and he was, I bet, almost 275, 290 pounds. He was rock hard. I said, "Coop, what happened, man?" He said, "No, I'm happy." I said, "Well, yeah." He said, all I did was speed over there. He said, I was so scared I was never going to sleep. And I could read that. I said, oh, man, all right. So on the way back over the ocean, he says to me, he says, hey, Ordo, we got a quota in the battalion for some duty in Hawaii. You want to go? I said, yeah, sure, Coop, send me. So I came home from that cruise. I got another leave, and then when my orders came while I was there, they bam, there was Hawaii, you know. So I remember that was the first time I shot some acid. When I got home, people were into doing acid and all that, you know, and I did some of that, and I woke up 2 months later in Hawaii. Find out I did 2 weeks of jungle training in California that I have no fucking recollection of ever happening. I was like, damn. But I spent a total of maybe about 3 months in Hawaii and found out I was part of a buildup. You know, this unit that I had become a part of that looked so lucrative was a rebuilding of a unit that got almost totally wiped out in Nam. And so I got real scared. And it drove home that, you know what, I might not be coming back. And it was one of the first times in my adult life that I remember praying from my heart and saying, yo, my man, please bring me home. Year and a half later, I came home. And when I came home, I thought, oh, man, all right, life is mine now. I can do with it what I want, you know. I got out of my enlistment a year and a half early because I had some combat time and everything started to fall in place. I met this kid from San Francisco. We got discharged in San Diego, and we hitchhiked from San Diego up to San Francisco. I got to see some of that, and I figured, well, I'll party out here for a little bit, then come back home. And it didn't quite work that way. I hitchhiked up to San Francisco, but I was there for maybe 2 or 3 days, and then I flew back home. And I knew I didn't want to, I figured I didn't want to do no dope. See, I was so scared over in Nam and everything that I didn't do no dope. I just drank and smoked. And I figured as long as I didn't do no dope, I wasn't getting high, I'd be all right, you know. When I came home and I figured life is all mine to handle now, I know what to do with it. Now it's time, now I can get high like I want. And I've been to hell and back, so what the hell? A lot of buddies of mine were real heavy into doing drug stores. And only this time, they were using pistols and stuff. And I thought, I can't do that, you know. To me, life was inconsequential. It didn't. If somebody pisses me off too quick, I'm liable to just pull the trigger. I can piss somebody else off on the other hand. They can take me out of here. I didn't like that. I like fighting with my fists. At least I get up and walk away. I can brush myself off. It's okay, man, you got me. Or, okay, man, I got you. You know what I mean? At least I knew how to handle that. This shit of not getting up afterwards. I didn't want none of that. But I got into back into burglarizing drugstores, and I did that for a couple of years. And one day a buddy of mine came up and told me, he says, hey, Ordo, the VA got this thing, it's called methadone. He says, it's a 6-month program. They put you on it. He says, and for the first 3 months, they get you stable, and the last 3 months, they detox you, and when you're off it, you're cured and you're good to go. I said, oh, sounds like a plan for me. So I signed up. And I should have known better. When I got there, when they were doing my admittance thing and they asked me what I was doing, and I tried to tell them, you know, the half grain, morphines and Dilaudids and stuff I was doing, they were trying to compare them to how many bags of dope that equaled. Now, any good junkie knows you can't compare apples and oranges. You know? And I should have known. But anyway, they got me in there and they got me on, and fuck, it was 14 years later they threw me on. I got complacent. I got complacent. The thing held me, you know. My thing was, I don't know, about a month, couple months couple months into it, I had to try and see. Everybody was, you know, doing some Valiums on it and drinking on it. You got to do this. This will boost it and this will do that. And fuck, every time I tried to do something, it cost me, you know what I mean, $300-$400 on top of the fucking meth. And then I didn't feel the meth. And the next day I was twice as sick. Well, what the fuck? So if I wanted to get high, all I did was just do more meth. Huh. But like I said, it was 14 years later that they threw me on. I had, what the thing had allowed me to do was still function half what, but still be getting high on the other hand. But somewhere along the way, I had this thing going in my head that I didn't have to live like this. I really didn't. You know what I mean? A lot of people, not a lot of people, some people that I grew up with were actually doing something with their lives. They were buying houses. They were having families. They were doing this, that, and the other thing. And me, I was still on the same street corner. And I thought, I remember my relationship with my parents. Now, there were four of us, my mom, my dad, me, and my brother. And my relationship with my parents had gotten to the point where I was only allowed to the house to grab a sandwich, drop off my clothes, talk a little bit, and then I had to leave. I couldn't stay. And that was it. I had gotten thrown off this clinic, and I remember when they told me they had a 21-day detox, that I'll do whatever it takes in order to try and make this detox work. You know, I don't care how sick I get, I don't care what goes on, I'll try and make this thing work. My hustle had gotten to the point where the only thing I was doing anymore was just riding people to go boost. I couldn't boost, because like I said, I ain't about finesse. You know what I mean? As soon as I was one of them guys, I walk into the store and all eyes were on me. I couldn't just, you know what I mean, and walk out. I remember one guy, he set it up for me. He says, here, Orv, I got a box in there that's loaded with cigarettes. All you got to do, it's sitting in the middle of the aisle in the cart. All you got to do is wheel the cart to the door, pick it up, and walk out with the box. I get to the door, and there's two big motherfuckers standing there like this. You know, what do you got in the box? Here, look, poosh, you know. And then I had to run, and I ran, I don't know, fuck. I run and fucking cops are out in the parking lot. They chased me for 6 fucking hours. They didn't catch me, but I ran for 6 fucking hours. That's about the finesse that I had. So that's why when at the end my hustle was, people would go, "You looking, Orv? You looking? Are you? You know? Let me go take you. Let's go fucking get something. You know." I take him out to boost, and on the way back, well, you'll get a third of this. No, motherfucker, I get half. You wouldn't have got it if I didn't ride you. Needless to say, not too many people took me. But anyway, I had gotten to that point where I really didn't want to live like that. I didn't know what to do, and I start calling around to detoxes to try and get into one. And this one hospital kept telling me, well, call tomorrow, call tomorrow, call tomorrow. For 4 days they told me that. And on that fourth day they said, we're going to have a bed tomorrow. And this is where I got to that point where I says, okay, today I ain't fucking doing nothing. No matter what, I ain't doing nothing. About eight or nine in the morning, man, I start feeling really shabby, you know. Remember going down to my mom's house, figure I'd get a sandwich, do something, whatever, you know, bullshit for a little while, waste a little time. That'll take me into lunchtime. Then all I got to do is waste a half a day, three quarters of a day. The next morning, I'd be in detox. Only thing was, when I went down to my mom's house, she had told me this lady friend of hers had called her and needed her hot water tank replaced. The two things I always had is a never out there. I never got a kid high. And I never took them from no old people. Now this lady was living by herself, she was widowed, and she was without a water tank, and she wanted me to install one for her. So my mom gave me her phone number, and I called her, and the lady says, yeah, but you know what, can you come out can you come out now to get the money? Because I ain't going to be home in the morning. So I'll leave the key under the thing. You can, you know, go get the tank, whatever, and do your work and have it in before I get back. I said, sure, Dorothy, okay. I was knocking on her door, I think, before she hung the phone up. And I told myself, when I come out of here, when I get to the end of the street, I'm gonna make a right. I'll go down. I'll give the money to my mom. Let her hold it. In the morning, I'll go down to the supply house, get the tank, you know, do what I got to do, and that'll be that. And then I'll go to the hospital. When I got to the corner, the car turned left instead of turning right, and I was on my way to the set. And I said, well, I'll just spend half the money, do half the dope, so I ain't sick. Still had the money to get the, you know how the math goes, you know. When I got to the set, I spent all the money. I get back, I did all the dope. 10 minutes later, I'm sick as I was when I started, going, what the fuck? What happened? I got, dope fiend is what happened. I called the hospital the next morning. They told me they had a bed. Come on out. So I went to my mom's house and I talked my dad into riding me out to detox, you know. And I waited till when I got out there. I waited till I got through the admission process. They took me upstairs, put me in bed and everything, you know, and I'm settled in. And then I went to the payphone and I called my mom. I said, hey mom, you got to call this lady. You got to give her her money back, man, so she can get somebody else to put this tank in. Because, y'all know, without no hot water, you ain't taking a shower. Without no hot water, you ain't doing no laundry. You ain't doing no dishes. You know what I mean? And talk about feeling bad. I felt bad. I felt bad. But my mom did that. And while I was in this detox, I met a friend of mine in there. He was a big old dude, and he had 6 or 7 catapress patches on him. And he's doing pickles and reds and telling him, you gotta tell him you can't sleep. They'll do this. Tell him the patch fell off in the shower and tell him, and all that going. I'm going, damn. That shit didn't work for me before. It ain't gonna work for me now. You know? Just like with the Valiums. Take Valiums. It'll boost your high. Yeah, if you eat 30 or 40 of them. And fucking then you don't remember what you did anyway. People got to tell you, boy, was you an asshole last night. So anyway, I get in this detox. I feel I'm going to try and make this work. And at this detox, they brought a meeting into it. And at this meeting, I heard a lady up here at the podium sharing her experience, strength, and hope. She didn't do nothing like I did. She didn't get high like I did. She didn't loaf with the kind of people I did. She didn't do nothing like I did. But at the end of her sharing, she says, if you got a problem and you don't know what to do with it, pray about it. And it rang that little bell off in my head. You know what? There's four times that I prayed in my entire adult life that I could, that I really remembered about it. And that was, like I said, when I knew I was going to NAM, I prayed I came back healthy. And I came back healthy. I got 2 good arms, 2 good legs. No teeth, but I got 2 good arms, 2 good legs. I got 3 kids that were born to 3 different women. They're all healthy. They're all healthy. And I thought, damn, I never prayed about this. And the reason I never prayed about this was I always felt that I was the one that got high. I should be the one to be able to quit getting high. Only it didn't work that way. It didn't work that way. This was one of the worst detoxes I've ever had, one of the worst sicknesses I've ever had. It felt like my whole insides was on fire, and nothing was calming, nothing was being all right with it, and I thought, damn. So I figured, well, I'll try that. I went up to my room after that meeting, and I prayed. And when I prayed, I cried. And when I cried, I just knew I was going to be all right, and that's all I needed to know. I didn't feel no better. But I just knew. And when I got out of detox, I said, go to a meeting. So I went to a meeting the next day, and at the meeting, I seen people I thought were dead, people I thought were locked up, and I, damn. This is where you've been, huh? 2-3 days into meetings, well, we ain't getting high. What do you mean you ain't getting high? Well, what are you taking? You ain't taking nothing. What do you mean they ain't? But when you look in somebody's eyes and they tell you they ain't taking nothing, you can see they ain't taking nothing. You go, damn, how you do that? I had two friends when I was growing up in high school that used to tell me, I ain't getting high today, Art. What do you mean you ain't getting high? I ain't putting my head in the clouds today. Huh? How the fuck do you do that? I just don't want to. What do you mean you don't want to? How do you not fucking want to? You know what I mean? But when I got here, this is what I heard. Just don't take nothing, Ardo. It'll be all right. My fourth day into meetings, I went to a meeting on the south side, and I heard a guy shear up here at the podium, and he got high like I did. He loafed with the kind of people I loafed with. He did the kind of things I did. And after the meeting, the way people treated him with hugs and kindness and all, I said, damn, you know, damn. I was in amazement. A couple of days later, I went to a meeting on the south side, and they said they had a temporary sponsorship at the meeting if anybody needed a sponsor. Now, look, I knew I needed help. There was no way I was going to figure this thing out on my own, but I needed help. So I went to, and I had the main dilemma I had with this thing was I couldn't trust somebody I knew because I knew you. And I couldn't trust anybody I didn't know because I didn't fucking know you. And I had a real dilemma of what to do. But after the meeting, I went up and I asked this guy for a temporary sponsor, and the guy he asked to be my sponsor was the guy I heard share at the podium. For me, that was all the spirituality I needed. That was the connection I needed to say, here's the help you asked for, now what are you going to do with it? You know what I'm saying? And my sponsor says, it'd be an honor. He says, you willing to do whatever it takes to stay clean? I said, yeah, sure. He said, here, and handed me a mop. But you know what? He helped me mop up the meeting place. Helped me, you know what I mean, showed me how to clean out the coffee pot. He says, tomorrow, he says, don't take nothing, get to a meeting, call me. I did that. The next day, he said the same thing. Get to a meeting, don't take nothing, call me. At the end of the week, he says, you know what? Don't take nothing, meet me in my home group tomorrow, and call me, you know? So, all right. So, next week, I met him at the home group, his home group there. We went and got some, he was donut man at his home group. And we went to Giant Eagle on Southside, got some donuts, took him to the meeting. Next week, the same thing. At the end of that week, he says to me, meet me at the meeting early, Arda. I said, why? He says, we're going to greet. I said, huh? Now, see, he knew the connect. I didn't know. I had a problem with hugging people. And this meeting on the south side, Sunday morning, Sunday go to meeting group, it used to be this big. And when I got there, I said, what the fuck's a greeter, Sam? He said, we're gonna hug everybody comes through this door. I looked at him like, what the fuck? You're out your mind, mister. You are out your cunt-picking mind. But you know what? I did it. I did it. Because I didn't know what not to do. Everything he was telling me to do so far worked. So I didn't want to not do it, you know? And you know what? After that meeting, I never had a problem hugging another addict. I don't care where I'm at, what I'm doing, where I meet you at, I'll give you a hug. Maybe when we're out there on the street somewhere and not out of a meeting place or something, if I get that query look in your eye, I might stick out my hand and shake it, you know? I've been there. I've done that. I was up in Massachusetts at work one day, and I walked into this parking lot, and I seen this guy. I said, hey. I said, how you doing, man? I went up and give the guy a hug, and I stepped back, and I said, fuck, he ain't in the program. He just said, hey, Ardo, how's it going? You know what I mean? And we still laugh about that. But that's, you know what, this is my connection now. You know, you know what I'm saying? The way I connect with another human being is what it's about for me. I was so far gone, so far separated, so far isolated, even from myself, that I don't know where I was. I have no clue where I was. And it took my sponsor to dig me out of that trench. It took another recovering addict to bring me home from that. You know what I'm saying? It took him to tell me, hey, Ardo, shut the fuck up and listen. I used to go into my, when I'd call him, I'd tell him my shit, and he'd say, yeah, but did you take anything? I'd say, no, but did you hear what I said? And I'd go into my shit, and he'd go, no, but did you hear what, did you hear? Did you take anything? I'd say, no, but did you hear? And I'd hear him snoring. And I'd say, hey, wake up. Did you hear what I said? And he'd say, no, but did you hear what I said? Did you take anything? I'd say, no. He'd say, well, what the fuck are you worried about? I'd say, oh. When we got to my first step, and it says, you know me, my life had become unmanageable. Fuck, I knew that. I got 3 kids of 3 different women. It's going to be unmanageable for the rest of my natural born days. But I have to connect. I have to connect and go, you know what? I don't have to be the one that's unmanageable with it. Life is going to be. I don't have to be. An addict I am. No doubt about it. You know what I mean? I know that for me. Like I said, you know what I mean? When help, what am I going to do with it now? When my sponsor says, we're going to work the first word or the first step for the first year, that's what I did. When he said, we're going to move on to 2, that's what I did. When we're going to move on to 3, that's what I did. The love and compassion this man has showed me and the honesty is the only reason I'm able to stand here before you today. That's the connection for me. That's the freedom for me. I never know where I'm going to get asked, who I'm going to get asked by, when I'm going to get asked, hey, Ardo, how you do this? And it's been proven to me over and over. I work for one of the biggest corporations on this planet, and they had me, I traveled from Bangor, Maine, to Corpus Christi, Texas, to Great Falls, Montana. And I've been to a lot of meetings here, there, and everywhere. You know what I mean? And we're all the same. It's always the same. How do you do this? And the answer is always the same. Don't take nothing. Get to a meeting and call me. And as long as you have that connection, then we're able to share the message. You know what I mean? This quality of life that I got, I don't know. I live my life happy, joyous, and free as a result of this program. And I try to live it to the max every day, day in and day out. Otherwise, I'm shortchanging I'm cheating myself. My mom used to always tell me when I was growing up, when you lie, you cheat. When you cheat, you steal. And I never got it. Fuck, I ain't lying to you. I ain't cheating from you. I ain't stealing from you. And that wasn't the message at all. The message was that if I lie, I cheat and I steal, no matter what I take from you, no matter what, I'm lying to myself, I'm cheating myself, and I'm stealing from myself. I'm lying to myself, telling me that I'm better off taking your shit instead of working for it. I'm cheating myself out of the experience it takes to work for it. And I lose focus of what the meaning of happiness is. And I learned that here. Every day my prayers, my morning prayers, the most important thing I've learned to say for myself is, yo, man, thanks for the faith you got in me today. I have to remember that this is reciprocal. You know what I mean? In order for me to give faith or whatever, I have to have it. If I don't have it, you know what I mean? What do I got to share if I don't have it? I can talk all the sense I can get in this head. But if I don't have it, if I don't live it, if I don't experience it, how can I share it? I remember a sponsee of mine one time told me, I have a hard time getting clean. Or I'm just powerless over getting hot. Fuck, I should have never said the next thing came out of my mouth. So if you're powerless over getting high, why are you fucking trying? Boy, that screwed his head up. But I was trying to get a point across, and it took a while, and geez. But some things, you know what I mean? I still got to do that. I still got to be able to make mistakes and go, I didn't mean to do that. You know what I mean? I still got to be able to, because I'm human. I'm gonna, you know what I mean? And I got to be able to say, you know what? We make mistakes. Well, my sponsees used to, when they get a year clean, I used to drill a hole in the coin, put a gum band on it, and I'd hand it to them, you know, and I'd say, If it ever happens and you relapse, the gum band is where we bounce back. We come back. The madness is in if you stay the fuck out there. Now that you know what this program is about and you've tasted this way of life, this freedom that this thing has given you, we bounce back. Don't stay lost. You know what I mean? A lot of us out there that, I remember listening to a Father Martin tape when I was in rehab, and a guy saying, you know, he had like 17 years clean or something, and he said the biggest difference between him and somebody that had 17 days clean is that if the guy with 17 days relapses, he's right back. He relapses, he might not come back. Because we get that knot in our throat. We get that emptiness in the gut. And we get that hole in the soul. And it's very hard for somebody with time to come back and say, hey, yo, you know what, I need your help again. Because we think we're better than that. We think we're always got to be here about the giving up. You know what, sometimes the most suffering addict in here is me. And you know what, a lot of times, I don't know I'm suffering until you tell me I am. I got to know, hey, Orv, that's fucked up. You ain't supposed to do that. When I got into a service commitment, I used to go down to the county jail at the drug court, and I used to try to explain to people what to expect when they showed up at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And the magistrate one time asked me, hey, Ordo, can you verify these signatures for us? I said, oh, Judge, yeah, sure we can. No problem. I said, but wait. Let me go ask my sponsor. You know what I mean? I gotta talk to somebody about this first. You know what I mean? Let me get back to you next time I come back. Thank God I said, but wait. Because it took him to tell me, hey, Orr, you know what? Sometimes the right thing to do ain't the right thing to do. You know, he says, do you know everybody in Narcotics Anonymous? I said, no. He said, well, then how can you verify? And then on the other hand, is say your brother, your kid, your sister, your whatever comes in and they got a phony name on the slip. Are you going to tell them? I said, you know what? I don't want nothing to do with them signatures, man. I don't want nothing to do with them. But you know what? This is how I get connected. This is how I stay connected. This is my one-on-one. You know what I mean? I'm living life to the max. I don't know to the best that I ever have been. I've got the best wife that life could have given me. My kids, nutty as fruitcakes, but they're my kids. You know, my daughter drives me nuts sometimes, but that's girls. I wouldn't have it any other way. One of my most favorite movies was Multiplicity. I don't know if how many of you ever got to see that movie. But after the fourth clone, it was a movie about cloning people, cloning you, you know, because the guy didn't want to do his work, figured he could get his clones to do it. After the fourth clone come out and he's all fucked up, you know. And he asks his clone, well, what happened to him? He says, you know, when you make a carbon copy of one and sometimes you make a carbon copy of the carbon copy, well, that copy comes out fucked up. Well, that's him. That's like, okay, I can read. It had to be an addict made that movie, you know. But at the end, his life got more screwed up than it was in the beginning when he started cloning himself. And the clone turned around and he was wondering how it got that way. And the clone says to him, maybe you ought to participate in your life. Maybe you ought to be a part of. I've never been such a part of my life as I am today in my whole entire life. It's the hardest I've ever been, that life has ever been, but like I said, I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't know how to live to the max if everything was always on an even keel. If everything was always the same. I remember Dot T one time saying at a spiritual retreat, I love confusion. You know why? Confusion makes your brain work. Because if you're confused, you got to think. You got to think. You got to exercise the brain muscle. I ain't never been uncomfortable with confusion since. I've been all right with that. You know? It's supposed to be that way. And sometimes I'm not supposed to know the answer. It'll be revealed later. I'm supposed to experience some things along the way. That's what this journey is about. It's about the experience. And only then can I share. I can't share something I didn't experience. I remember being, when I was on meth, one of my biggest things was, this fucking counselor don't know what he's talking about. She ain't never got high. The fuck is he going to counsel me? What's he going to tell me? You know what I mean? Read this chapter. And I used to always tell my kids the same thing when they were growing up. Look, the shit I'm telling you ain't because I read it in a book, ain't because I seen it on TV, ain't because I seen it in a movie somewhere. It's because that's what I lived, that's what I did, and this is what happens to people that get high. You know? My oldest son, he's down in Florida at a rehab. I got a middle son that's 23. He's struggling. He just got out of the county jail. I got a 19-year-old that's got a job at Children's Hospital. Struggling, but he's got a job. And he's okay, you know? So I have no idea where this goes, but all I know is I'm here today. You need to know something. My daughter's 12. She needs to know I'm here. I'm here. I'm not out there somewhere going, I'll be right back. Wait right here. Don't go nowhere. I'll be right back. Although sometimes I feel guilty. Like I said, my job takes me on travel. Now it's short-lived a little bit. I got a territory that's from Columbus, Ohio to State College and up to Erie. So I'm a little bit, no matter where I'm at, I'm always 3 hours from home. And I kind of like it like that, you know? But I'd never, never in a million years trade in the experience that Narcotics Anonymous has given me. It's shown me, you know, the only thing I know to do with it, that I treasure to do with it, is share with it. Whether it's here, whether it's at my home group, whether it's one-on-one with somebody on a golf course somewhere or in a back alley somewhere. Like I said, I never know where, I never know when, but I got to be ready, willing, and able, and I got to be honest. And I gotta be honest. That's the crux of this thing. So, I thank y'all for listening. If you ain't got nothing from me, my clean date December 26th of 1992. If I got one, you can have one. And if you have one, you can hold on to it. You can hold on to it. It's a one day thing. Today. Thanks.